computer.
Kia ora koutou, and welcome to another episode of South Pacific Muscle. Been a bit of a nothing day here, hiding in the rain. Not much good for anything except Pukekos and off-season bodybuilders that are overheating like anything. So a nice cool day in the bay. It's been a dream. How's it down your way, Mr. Tab?
Oh, beautiful. It was all right this morning. Went shitty during the middle of the day, and now the sun's out. There's not a cloud in the sky. So it got hot just in time for me to train legs.
Oh, not sure I like that. And what's a beautiful Bay of Plenty doing, Mike?
It's even worse. Drizzly, wet, grey, cold. Well, no, actually not cold, but yeah, all the rest of it. Good day to watch some Winter Olympics.
Mike Tab, I've got your a little bit of your shirt sticking up. I want to see it. I want to see the shirt, buddy.
Well, I'm a bit of a Mike Kingsnorth fanboy, but not that much to just get my own T-shirt printed.
It's cool.
Do you want to talk about that? It does look
real quickly, because I don't want to push on about these things. But what we decided to do at South Pacific Muscle was to try and support local bodybuilding. And I guess, you know, we're kind of the historians and things. So, you know, over the years, we've had some really great bodybuilders and, you know, thousand I could choose from, you know. But we decided that we wanted to do some shirts, a signature series shirt with some of the guys that we looked up to and that we do look up to currently in the current crop of those competing. So plan is that we release a shirt every couple of months, depending on demand for it. And we put a new New Zealand bodybuilder, female, male, and put them on a shirt, get their signature on the shirt, and get them out there just in limited numbers. So can have another look at the shirt. I really like it. It's good. Oh, man, I'm going to fill the gym with those, man. So as I say, guys, pretty limited numbers. So if you do want them, just DM us and we'll sort that out. Talking about shirts here, what do you got on there, Mike?
Body Science. Purple and yellow, I think they call it the LA one or something, and the
LA Lakers, yeah.
Hat. I felt it appropriate, seeing as I can actually lay claim to the fact that 100% of current New Zealand Winter Olympic gold medal winners at some point through my contract as the preferred supplier for New Zealand Olympic program used Body Science in their prep. So, nice. Yeah.
Wow, good stuff. I feel a little bit left out. I'm the only one that hasn't got a shirt by you know, myself or one of my companies sort of thing. So I've got the, as you can see, the Lisa Bailey Team Rhino shirt that I was given. So, nice shirt. I'm enjoying it.
You're not the silent partner in Hostile.
Oh, well, I didn't mention that. you'll see I need a big ute with a lift kit and stuff, and, you know, so not quite there. Hey, sorry, Mike, you were going to say something.
Yeah, by the time the YouTube comes out, the Insta promo will probably come out too. And you'll notice just as I was leaving the gym with the shirts, a guy at the gym did the shirts for us, designed and printed them. And he dropped them off to me just as the gym was closing. But he was also starting out just to do some filming with Sheena for a new app. And so I said, hey, Sheena, do you want to model this for us? So she was good enough to pop one on, and she said, Mike Kingsnorth was my first sponsor. He was the first guy to sponsor me. So there's a bit of a full circle there. But
she's a legend herself, guys. So really cool to see.
Maybe she want to be on the next T-shirt. She might want to be on the next T-shirt.
I hope you gave her one, Mike. I hope you gave her one.
Beyond the legend, I mean, she won the New York Pro. I sometimes think what it would be like if you were a bikini competitor in New Zealand, you looked down and saw Sheena judging you. You'd be like, both honored and terrified and in awe all at the same time. You know, just, I keep telling you, man, you got to be judging more, because just the feeling for those females up there seeing her judge would just be like Greg Murphy giving you bloody driving tips. Just,
hey, man, I still feel like that even in New Zealand shows when I look at the judging panel. Yeah. And I look down there and think, holy shit, this Shane, he looks really good at the moment. There's one of the O'Malley boys. Oh man, remember him on stage? He was phenomenal. And I'm looking down, and you got Mo in there, and you're like, holy fuck, a good guy who's been on the Olympia stage. and I'm standing up here in my fucking undies doing what? Yeah, so pretty cool, pretty cool. You know, and even with the NABBA guys, I didn't realize this until just recently, Mike. NABBA president, throw a name at me.
Jim Pitt.
I had a look up and there was some, there are some bodybuilding photos of him and he was quite a handy bodybuilder. I've always just known Jim Pitt as Jim Pitt, you know, because he looked the same for the last 25 years in the suit and the, you know, the hair and you know, he's Jim Pitt. But yeah, he was apparently quite a handy bodybuilder himself. So on both, you know, NABBA and NZIFBB, when you're looking down as an amateur and not having been on the pro stages that you've obviously been on, Mike, but you kind of feel like you're walking amongst the legends a little bit, you know? So, yeah. But hey,
as an amateur and as a pro, let me tell you, I remember back in 2009, I was at the Nationals and I'm standing there having a conversation with Joe Olberg and Dan Hibbs.
Yep.
And I'm sitting there saying to myself, holy shit, that guy's Mr. New Zealand. Holy shit, that guy is Mr. New Zealand. And I'm like, I'm excited having conversations with these guys, you know. So and it's still, I remember when I won it, and I'm not exaggerating, not a word of a lie, for a year I got goosebumps every day when I would think to myself, holy shit, I'm Mr. New Zealand. So I'm still the biggest fanboy of all. I can tell you what Dan posed to in 1996 when he won the juniors. I can tell you what Mo posed to in 2004. You know, it's like,
hey, has anyone got footage of Mo when he won his pro card in Lebanon? Because I've never seen any of those photos or anything from. I would have loved to have seen what he was like when he actually won his pro card. You know, yeah. I'd imagine he'd be pretty mind-boggling because he'd already won some California titles and that, right?
I'm sure he wasn't shabby because I think it was a couple of weeks later. It might have been when he did the New Zealand show,
yeah.
And he looked pretty handy. So,
yeah.
You know, it's funny thing with Mo is that he always posed his arms and showed off his arms and talked about his arms. But I remember when in that show and when he did 2008, it was like, man, his legs were like freaking tree trunks. It was like, you know, he underestimated, in my opinion, and I've told him many times, his own legs. They were just thick. They weren't sweepy, but man, they were thick. So, yeah.
Oh, well, the lofty heights. So, yeah, so we'll get those shirts out. But we've done a lot of them in oversized too, which, you know, as I said, we're about to head into our topic, which is a bit about bulking. And those oversized shirts are just gold when you're bulking, man. You don't get that, you don't get that tuck under your arms and you know.
No, it's horrible.
So the reason I want to touch on bulking was actually I just need some help here, guys. I'm about... I don't know. I must be 6-8 weeks into a decent bulk. But for the last 3 weeks, I've been pushing pretty hard. And I've got to the point I'm waking up in the morning and I'm not hungry, you know, and I'm in the gym and I feel full. I feel like I don't want to move. But my workouts have been absolutely amazing, absolutely tearing them apart. So performance is really high, but energy levels are really low. Desire to think about anything bodybuilding related has dropped right off. And I'm kind of wondering as I hit those workouts, fuck, you know, have I got it to do this for another year, you know, to push this hard? And then I thought, look, you're only 3 weeks into this bulk. I'm probably going to, I was planning on bulking for another 7 out the other side. But I'm wondering what to, when you hit that horrible, uncomfortable phase, is it just a case of, hey man, you've got to enjoy you've got to learn to live with or bear or enjoy feeling discomfortable all of the time to push through. So I want to put it over to you first, Mike Kingsnorth, just to get some feedback on, you know, when you've had to do those bulks and really sort of push yourself to try and get some sides.
Yeah,
play the game.
The problem a lot of guys do is they overbulk straight away. So they go from, you know, a calorie deficit to, you know, 1,000 calories over or whatever. It's like, you don't have to go crazy. Start with like 200 calories. I know people say you've got to be over 500. Start with 200 because your stomach, when you're dieting, shrinks. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to force all that in and then you're going to stretch your gut out and it's going to be uncomfortable. But there's no rule that says you have to do 500, 1,000. Start with 200 for a week. Then just creep it up and creep it up and accept that you're going to get used to it as well. But also you're going to get to the point where it's not enough and you're going to be having, you know, 1,000 calories above, and you know, you've got to suffer for a couple of weeks in there at least, or probably four, and then you're going to be hungry. You're going to be going, man, I can't get enough food in. is also, you know, we take deload weeks off training. So you're not there yet, but at week sort of 6 or 7, deload on your food for a week, just cut back. It might be drop one food meal, replace it with a WPI shake, which is still going to give you that protein hit. Yeah. But being watery, you're not going to feel loaded up. It's just that one meal a day, man, it'll change your life. You'll just feel comfortable for a week. And then you can just push it again a little bit.
It sounds really good. It sounds really good right now because, you know, like it's the whole day and you're just like, you know. And I'm kind of, you know me, I like to dig in and go, fuck, this is a challenging part. You really hammer down on it and just keep nailing it. But I'm also another mind going, do I really want to do it? And just, I think that's just a challenge.
For shits and giggles, let me tell you, when I first turned pro and I was going hard out and putting size on, like, I was growing like a weed. You wouldn't believe it. My last meal of the day was a full cream milk ice cream with a banana and ice cream added in there. It was just nuts. It was the most calorie dense, you know, shake of the day.
Do you probably remember this? Do you remember a former Miss New Zealand who decided he really wanted to bring the size up and he added 4 pies to his normal diet?
Oh.
Extra 2,000 calories. You certainly know who this is, but I remember he did it and I had a conversation and he said, I got my, you know, like, fuck, I put on the size, man, but I went and got my bloods done and my cholesterol was the highest reading that the doctor had ever seen.
Wow.
And he said that within 2 weeks it had come back to normal because he just cut them out of the diet. But that's a pretty extreme way of getting those extra calories.
If you really want it, a Burger King double whop with cheese is 998 calories. And I remember when I was working at Bedpost 20 something years ago, Matt Clark would order one, but with a Diet Coke.
I'm going to break that 2 calories head spare for 1,000.
It's the funniest shit, yeah.
Look, we've all done it, man. Like when I was a student and we were trying to bulk and we couldn't afford, you know, massive amount of food. So we'd buy the white bread, Mike, and then get the dollar mince and cheese pies from Georgie Pie. And then make the sandwich
too. Yep. We now know that it's not dirty bulk. That, you know, you put the fat on, you've got to take the fat off, and that gets harder as you get older. So just be a little bit smart. This isn't 1994 anymore. We don't have to do stupid shit. So as I say, have a more gradual bulk. Instead of 500 to 1,000 calories, go for 200, then 250, 300. As long as it's going up, you'll be going up.
Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, I did the same in my 20s, put on size any way possible. I think before I did the Nationals in 99, I got to 131 kilos. So I lost 22 kilos in 11 weeks, came in at 109 at South Island, and then 2 kilos lighter for Nationals. So, and that was, you know, a tin of peaches and 3 scoops of ice cream in my protein shake, that sort of thing, just put on the size. Because I knew I could lose the body fat, I just needed to put on size somehow. My initial thoughts were, you know, glucose, measure your blood fasting glucose, how's your insulin sensitivity? If it's not there, then maybe something like berberine or, you know, using a glucose disposal agent to try and help the sort of absorption of those.
I'm going to cut to the chase, Mike, because I just want an opinion on it. I guess how you guys approach your off season, because you've both come out of shows recently. I know, Mike, when I saw you, you know, a couple of weeks after your show, you were still looking like you were ready to go on stage. So tell us about what you've done since the show and how you've pushed into your off season.
For me, it's actually been about not getting too stupidly fat crazy and loading up. When I came down from 2019 for those North American shows, I came down from 115 odd kilos. I mean, I was struggling. I literally had to get help putting socks on at times. And we realized, you know, I don't need to go that big. So last time I come down from about 109, 110, it's like, well, I'm still within the actual classic body weight. I just have 3 meals and a shake a day. One of those meals I'm having no carbs in it. So I'm staying clean and lean because I just want to be healthy until I decide what I really want to do. I mean, I'm theoretically retired, but who knows? I'll never say never as well. But, you know, in the past, I've been a big believer in have that bounce back effect, max it out, put as much food in as quick as you can, train hard. But I think we all probably go through that. We're excited after a show, we're blowing up, we're looking at the photos and whatnot. Then about 4 weeks out, we're going, man, I'm over this. And so you've got to try and use that 4 week space, put as much, I guess, bounce back into it, because you're going to probably take a couple of weeks off, have a deload, I'm looking after the joints. The knees are still giving me a bit of grief, so I'm not doing anything crazy heavy or whatnot. I guess it's different now that I'm 50 versus when I was 30, you know, and how I approach it.
Definitely. I think that's probably something that we're all quite conscious of now, that, you know, even when we want to put on some size, how much weight do we really want to be carrying around in the off season? And, you know, like, I'm feeling big now and I'm only, you know, up and around 104 in the morning. And, you know, at times I've been, you know, when I've been training and competing, I've been sitting around 110. And I'm like, if I add another, you know, 6 kilos, how am I going to feel? And I kind of answer that question because I know how it feels being that heavy for me. Yeah. And I certainly know that if I feel that physically, that's having a toll on my, you know, my heart, obviously working a lot harder. And so how much of that do you really want to do once you've got the muscle you've got and you're sort of competing in a class rather than trying to push and progress?
And it's where you put it on too. I mean, I just seem to stack more and more fat on my back as I get older. And so I've got to take that off. And, you know, I tell you, from 2019, 2021, by staying that little bit lighter, my waist was about 3 to 4 centimeters smaller. And so, well, that has a massive effect for your onstage presence. It makes your thighs look sweepier. It makes your shoulders look wider. So size for the sake of size, how often we've seen, even in the open division, guys just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then there's that moment where it's just like, ah, too big. And suddenly they're, you know, their Nasser El Sambari coming 13th or something going to show when they were potential Olympia winners. Yeah. It happens a lot, I think, in 212. The sheer chase for size, they end up blowing out the midsection. And it's like, you know, there's guys who could do better as 212s being 10 pound lighter, you know, because it's in the wrong place.
Steve Klutko's kind of done the same thing, apparently. He said he's coming into this show 10 pounds lighter than he did last time.
Well, he's a big, big, wide,
massive.
You know, he stands the stage. He looks bigger than everyone, but he's not winning when it's all, you know, 50 pounds above them and it's on the waist.
When I look back to, you know, 99, when I was trying to get as big as I possibly could by any means necessary, and I was walking around at 130 kilos, obviously, you know, blood pressure, doing up your shoelaces, all that sort of stuff. But I also thought, you know, I went down and I was on stage at the Nationals at 107. So therefore, what did I lose? 24 kilos. So I could have been 10 kilos lighter at the max of my off season. And then if I'm carrying 10 kilos less, then I can afford to eat less food and still grow. So how many calories am I burning just by carrying 10 kilos around with me all day? Yeah. So if you're a little bit more controlled, and I wasn't, you know, I was just shoving food, you know, as much food as I get down my throat. But if I was a bit more controlled and a bit more precise with my diet, then I could make better productive use of that food that I was eating.
Yeah. And when we're smashing so much food, and I think it's, you know, for every inch that goes on our arms, shoulders, or legs, we put 2 or 3 on our waist, and it just is pointless.
Yeah. So my goal this year is to stay within about 10 to 12 kilos of stage weight. I came down 16 or so last year, and surprised a lot of people in the gym that I actually looked like a bodybuilder when I got lean. So I'd like to at least look a little bit more like a bodybuilder in the off season. And then it means my prep can be a little bit more moderate. I don't have to really kill myself as much, or I kill myself just as much and come in more shredded. So either way.
Yeah. On the few times where I've managed to come in on a prep and I've started quite lean, it's been just amazing how effective it was. And I've come in uber peeled because of that. So, you know, 94 Nationals, where I was staying really lean, and I, you know, when I think my pro debut, I was quite lean even at the beginning of the diet. You know, it just makes life, as you say, a lot easier at the back end, at the tail end of the prep.
And that's just more self-discipline in the off-season, isn't it? It's not like you can't treat yourself, not like you can't have a calorie surplus or cheap meals now and then.
I had different reasons. When I went to New Zealand, I didn't train or eat properly for for about 6 months. I just couldn't be asked. I was like, oh, I've done that, and didn't really know what I was going to do and whatnot. And so I was having breakfast. I was having a bowl of cornflakes at 1 in the afternoon. So I was just staying light and lean and working and not even thinking about it. And then it was the choice was put to me. You can either go to the world champs or you can turn pro. I just phoned Tom Terry and said, Tom, would I make top 10 at the worlds? And he goes, hell yeah, of course you would, Mike. Easy decision. And, you know, I went, well, that's good enough for me. Then I'll turn pro.
Oh, gold. Hey, look, that's some good discussion around there. I mean, we could talk about it for a while. because, you know, it forms such a big part of our year. You know, we spend more time off season than prepping, unless it's been a last year. I think did anyone prep in less than 16 weeks last year? I don't know.
Yeah, 24.
It was pretty crazy for me. I'm not even sure what mine was. It was lots.
It was a year and a half, wasn't it?
It was 24 months, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Honestly, it was about 14 months. So, you know, that's an expensive hobby and eats up a lot of time and things where, we could, you know, I could be focusing on other stuff. So let's not do that again. Bad idea. Hey, the other one I wanted to touch on was home gyms. And for those guys and girls that are out there that are training in home gyms at the moment, how do you keep motivated training in a home gym? Because for me, going to the gym is part of the experience. And, you know, I like going to the gym. I like having a yak with people. I like getting on lots of machines, having variation, as well as doing the heavy free weights. And at a home gym, you generally don't have the selection or the poundages. There's usually not a lot of people around. I guess on the pro side, you can crank your music as loud as you like. You can make as much noise as you like. And you can take your shirt off and pose in your own mirror. And you're training the nude. You're training the nude. I'm going to ask the question. Has anyone actually done that?
Jump the laterals. Make sure the laterals to your side, not in front.
No, I can't say as I have.
Anyway, you can train. You don't have to really dress for it. You can kind of roll off the couch working on the laptop into the home gym. But how do you keep that motivation? Have either of you guys, for any set period of time, worked at a home gym or trained in a home gym? Or, you know, what are your experiences with others? And some of the tips to keep really, really pushing as hard as you would as you're at the gym every day?
Not an extended period of time. First lockdown and last year's first lockdown, it would be embarrassing to call it a home gym, what I had. I mean, I sent you the picture. It was basically I had a dumbbell barbell set that went up to 50 kilos. A guy from the local gym happened to be going past, saw my car parked at the front, dropped in a whole set of really amazing bands for me. And that was pretty much it. And I was making it work. I was getting some great gains, great workouts out of it, though, being creative. I really actually enjoyed it. Just training in my own environment. It was, you know, not having to deal with other people, not having to go there. Yeah, you're missing the equipment. And I'm sure probably if it had gone longer, I probably would have really started missing some equipment. I was contemplating buying stuff, and some people have gone out and spent some pretty money and bought some really cool stuff. You know, I used to sell home equipment back in the day. So if you'd asked me 15, 16 years ago, I could have told you the sales pitch lines convince you, yeah, you're going to have the best workouts of your life and be Mr. Olympia if you wanted to train home. But, you know, the reality is with a lot of the home gym equipment, it's not manufactured to the same standard, the canvas and so forth, as the commercial stuff. So it's not going to feel as good, but then, you know,
out of curiosity, because most people won't comprehend this, but to get a Smith machine and a leg press, if you had to buy that and you bought it commercial grade, not commercial grade, if you bought it for home gym, what would you be paying for a leg press? What would you be paying for a Smith squat?
You'd probably in the leg press be getting in, I would expect that you'd probably go for one of those ones where it folds and becomes a hack squat as well. I think Steve Orton's got one in his back garage. He used to have the tiny little home gym going home and use it. But you'd be talking probably, if it was new, up in the sort of $4,000 mark. Smith machine, probably, you know, $2,000 thereabouts. Now, all depends. There's quite a few to choose from. There's some really impressive pieces out there.
Mike, if we went to the commercial equivalent and you had to go and buy, say, an Arsenal Strength or a hammer piece of gear, Smith machine and a leg press, what sort of coin are we talking? What's the difference to get that quality?
Got the price lists from Arsenal somewhere here on my desk, but I have a pretty untidy desk.
Yeah.
Arsenal's actually, if you're buying direct off them out of the US, some really sharp pricing on equipment. The issue is then you're paying for shipping and it takes up a lot of room, but it was a fair penny still, but it was more than commercial, but more than retail, but not as much more as you might expect.
Okay.
So, you know, but you'd have to be hardcore as hell to go to that level, because these are designed to take not just the loads that we put on there, but, you know, the amount of use. We're going to use it once a week, twice a week, if it's a leg press, for example, whereas a leg press at City Fitness is getting used, what, 60 times a day or something. And so those bearings are designed to handle that. And you probably don't need to. I mean, the funny story is, you know, Darren Onikawa, when he won Mr. New Zealand, he used to work for Elite Fitness as I did, and then Rotorua, and he would train in the shop after closing. And, you know, that was all home gym equipment. He got a couple of commercial pieces put down for potential customers, but he trained on home gym, Nautilus home gym equipment in the shop. And
I got offered a Polaris hack squat. Do you remember the Polaris vertical hack squat? Fully vertical, man. Like
my knees remember them more.
So I got buried on two plates aside. The most I ever saw anyone do was Derek Bumana do three plates aside, or maybe four plates. And he was a guy that was squatting 380. So beautiful bit of machinery, but really humbling. Anyway, they had one of those and they chopped it down to 45 degrees. And absolutely perfect. It's my favorite hack squat I've ever used. And I went and saw the guy about it, and I said, "Where's that hack squat gone?" He goes, "Oh, it's in storage in a garage. Do you want to buy it?" I went, "Yeah, how much?" And I was expecting a moonbeam price because it's an amazing bit of kit. And he said, $300. And I went, I haven't got a garage. So as soon as I've got a garage, I'm going to buy that bit of kit. And I won't have anything, but I'll have a hack squat.
Probably got a mate with skinny legs who has a garage.
I have to have a look. But I thought that was an amazing deal. But I imagine the price of, you know, say if you went and bought some Hammer strength gear, or you went and bought some Arsenal strength gear, or
I told you the story about Gary at the Olympic gym and replacing all the gear. Yeah. So halfway through the 3 to 6 months, he'll have everything redone. He got a credit with Life Fitness for, I think it was 1.2 million or something like that. So I went through like a kid in a candy shop going, "Oh, we'll have a plate loaded incline Hammer strength. We'll have some Cybex leg gear. We'll have..." So, and I didn't look closely, but he had everything that's currently in his gym was itemized with a retail and a wholesale price. And I think the wholesale kind of came to that 1.2 million. He's getting all Hammer strength plates and blah, 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 all that sort of thing. But I seem to recall those big bits of kit being somewhere around that sort of 20 grand kind of level. So don't quote me on that, because I could be wrong. But
so what other things do you do other than buying, you know, new bits of kit and treating yourself? What other things can you do if you're training in a home gym and you really want to keep
just on the kit before we move on? A client of mine in Queenstown is unvaxxed, so he can't get in the gym, but he wants to prep for a competition sort of partway through the year. So we're about,
which he won't be able to go to.
Well, I think he's sort of realised that he's just going to have to. So I think he's had his first dose now. But he, about sort of 6 weeks ago when we started together, he bought himself from Elite Fitness, he bought himself a big sort of multi-gym with a Smith squat and a cage and the works. And I think that cost him sort of $3,000 or $4,000. And with bands and things, he gets some pretty good. Obviously, he's got plates and, you know, he misses the dumbbells a little bit. He's still waiting for some more plates to arrive, that sort of thing. But he actually prefers training there for the most part. I mean, really, legs are kind of what you miss out on. And during the second lockdown, I went and trained him at the school gym. And there's about 140 kilo of plates there. And there's a squat rack and the incline bench. And there's a cable crossover. But, it was mainly the leg gear that I missed. So not being able to sort of leg press, hack squat, that sort of thing. Quad extensions, hamstring curls, that sort of stuff.
It's really creative stuff coming there. I remember seeing a Facebook advert or whatnot for a piece that you could attach to like side of your standard piece of equipment, like one of the poles or whatnot. And it had a cable that came off, and when you pulled it, something internally was getting tighter and weaker and tighter and weaker. So it created tension, but it was an increasing, I guess, dynamic level of tension without any part moving on the whole equipment. And it's just some really crazy, as you say, you've got your mate there that's bought a Smith with a whole bunch of bits and pieces on there. There's some stuff you can buy for a home gym that, you know, that are better than some of the stuff we were starting on back in the 90s. So I can tell you that. It's just, and it would fit in your garage comfortably, and you could probably park the Mini in there as well.
Yeah. It kind of, I mean, it sounds tempting to have that as something you can use when you just want to go and train. You don't really want all the, you know.
Well, I've contacted the insurance company to try and grab a few bits and pieces from Olympic before it heads out of the city. Sort of as is, where is, you know, you don't have to transport it, give me a cheap price on it, just so that I can have maybe a squat rack and a cable cross and a few plates and an incline at home, just in case we go into lockdown again. You know, you can muddle through for a few weeks.
Yeah, they'll love you. That's a win for them. They expect probably to write it off. And so if they can get anything back and have less of the headache of even having to deal with it,
I think the Life Fitness are going to take it all back and refurb it and sell it secondhand. So, but I mean, if they don't have to ship it anywhere, then maybe, you know, who knows. And Gary's the powder coating was kind of munted on it. So it either all needs to be repowder coated, and then there's business interruption insurance and all sorts, or they actually agreed to just sort of replace it all. But he's got an exclusion so that they can't sell it to anybody within 150K radius. So, you know, the next door neighbor can't sort of buy it all, set up a gym right next to him. Because it looks a bit shabby and it makes the gym look shabby. So it does need to be sorted, but it's still perfectly workable. The equipment's all fine. So I said, you know, can I grab a couple of bits for at home, a couple of bits for school? Delane wants a couple of bits for the police gym. And those are all sort of non-commercial entities. So he shouldn't have too much of a problem with that. Oh, Gary's pretty good to us anyway. He doesn't mind. I mean, we're not in competition with him. So I just got to sort of negotiate that with Life Fitness when they sort it out with the insurance company.
Fine, exciting. Gary, that owns Elite Fitness, used to repowder coat a lot of stuff and then just put it back into the gyms. And it looked brand new. It was like perfectly fine. I mean, the metal was still perfectly structurally sound. You replace, obviously, the cables and the pulleys and handles and so forth. But the metal, just repowder coat it, and great. And we like the old stuff sometimes. It's got a feel to it.
I don't know the exact sort of numbers, and, you know, don't quote me on this, but I think with all the gear, all needing to be repowder coated, it was something like 600K. And then with taking bits and pieces off the floor and then sort of business interruption insurance, and they've got to store it somewhere and bring it back in a couple of pieces at a time, it sort of became a bit, by the sounds of it, it sounded like it became a bit too much of a hassle for them, and they just went, okay, look, let's just replace it all. So the insurance company agreed to replace it all. So we were sort of kidding the candy shop with the brochures, and like, I'll have a couple of those and one of those and one of these, and we'll put these over here and we'll redo the mirrors. But it'll be sort of 3 to 6 months because it's all, he got to kind of choose his upholstery and the stitching and everything. So it's got to be made and shipped over. So
The idea of doing customized stitching on stuff, you know, like if you had a little home set up and, you know, if you had a decent setup and you had the opportunity to repowder coat stuff and take stuff to the upholsters and get your own logo put on it, that'd be quite nice. I'd love to walk into, I guess, like Fuad's got that his new setup, you know, and it's all exactly how he wants it. If you had that with your home gym, you'd probably be pretty happy there. And I've seen some, I was going to do a shout out too to Aidan Thedom and Leisha over in training over in Napier. I've got a home gym set up. Got quite a good little setup in there.
Got a fair bit of weight there too, eh?
And he is, he made out some weight. I think you guys saw the post with Leish giving him a smack across the shoulders and he ripped 11 reps on 220 or something. So that's some pretty good intensity going down in the home gym there. So
it's
really good to see that. Can't wait to train with him again. Hopefully in the next week or two, he'll be back in the gym so I can get in and have training with him. But shout out for those people at home that are working in those home gyms and are putting in the effort and dieting when dieting's on and bulking when bulking's on and, you know, missing that feedback from the gym but still doing it every day. And,
a lot of people kind of like that atmosphere and like having people around either to, you know, impress someone else or, you know, just talk to someone else or get in that whole frame of mind. I think part of that's routine, though. So if you are having to train at home, like, you know, do like you normally do, eat for your workout, do all the same things, you know, go get yourself ready, have your little routines, and that can kind of help cue you mentally to go and train.
I enjoyed the time saved not having to drive to the gym and all that sort of stuff as well. One of the things, a little bit, but I don't know, soppy, but it was cool. I was training out the courtyard there when it was sunny and not raining. I don't know what I'd do on a day like today, but it was really cool. My son was able to look out and see Dad training it and got a vibe for what Dad actually does, because otherwise he'd never seen. I go and watch him do judo, but he'd never seen me train. And it was kind of cool to, you know, they say, you know, trainer work like, you know who's watching. Well, I actually could see him watching, and it gave me a bit of pep to make sure I did back off. So it was kind of cool. One of the you asked what people do. One of the things I love doing, I picked it up in 2019 off Dr. Mack, who's a PhD guy, Professor Mack in the Gold Coast, and he's a big jacked dude as well. So he's got the microbiology degree or whatever it might be. I don't know, but he knows his shit inside and out. And he got me onto Epoch for quads. And so I would train legs regularly on a Monday, then I go back on Thursday and do Epoch, which is basically 30 seconds as hard as I could with as much resistance as I could on a spin bike, 2 minutes of just freewheeling, 30 seconds, 2 minutes, then doing seven rounds of it. Well, I didn't have a spin bike at home, but I've got a hill next to my house and a bicycle. So I'd go around there, set the bike up onto the hardest gear, and 30 seconds up the hill, and then stop in 30 seconds and do that. And that blows your legs. You get a huge, massive quad pump, but it's not that that central nervous system blast where you're crawling out of the gym and shattered for a week. Your legs are blown out, but it's just your quads, not your back, your glutes, your hams, and your whole, you know, cardiovascular system. So it's a great little addition. Do that once a week, about 4 days after quads. And I got some phenomenal results out of it. Do it on the hill. Yeah.
You heard it first. So great tip there for guys and girls training. I'm just going to go back to the beginning and talk back to bulking. Wouldn't that be a great idea, having some kind of training in like that, along with your steady state cardio, just for heart health when you are getting that big in the off season?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it would be, because also, and there's a lot of stories about, the steady state cardio just transports a lot of oxygen around, which helps with muscle growth as well. So you're both helping your insides and the stuff that we all want to look at as well. And if it's burning off a little bit of excess calories, well, you know, it's probably calories that were going to be stored in your gut or your lower back, as it would be with me anyway. But there's always that debate online. It's usually between, you know, a bodybuilder and a CrossFitter about steady state versus HIIT, you know, and the Epoch. I don't want to call it HIIT training. I call it Epoch because it's about getting bigger quads. But if I also happen to rip up a little bit with it, I'm not going to complain. So it's best of both worlds, you know, that we do know that high intensity interval training does have a really good effect for calorie burning. You're burning the same, I think, roughly as you would for steady state. But it's obviously a lot shorter and there's muscle growth benefits out of it. I tried doing it on a rower once, but man, my lower back just got torched, not in an injured way, but just smashed, you know, so I wasn't happy doing high intensity on a rower. But on a bike, I'll do that, and then it's over with. I mean, you're talking, it's a 15-minute workout and you're out the gym, and yeah, mate, that's a good day. Yeah,
I might give that one a shot. I'm just thinking that another benefit from that would probably be, if you're not doing any high intensity cardio, or, you know, all your cardio is just slow, steady state stuff, as you get bigger in the off season, your recovery between sets seems to get a lot worse. And I think that's because you're breathing a lot harder, you know, with carrying all that extra weight. And then you go into your next set and you're still kind of a little bit out of breath, a little bit tired. But I don't think you perform as well in those following sets because your fitness is down so much because you're not doing anything.
That was a reason Tony Freeman did steady state off season, just to have his cardiovascular fitness, so his weight training would be benefited from that. Whereas old Josh Lanardwicks, his philosophy was do your next set once your respiratory system is recovered enough to do that set. But I mean, if you're taking 3 minutes, geez, it'd be embarrassing. We'll start calling ourselves powerlifters or something.
We just roll on from prep into off season and go, well, I better keep doing some cardio and carry on with your low intensity, steady state stuff. You're not really doing a lot for your cardiovascular system or your heart health. So you really do need to kind of do something at a higher intensity to have those benefits. Doesn't necessarily need to be every day, but I read a study that showed that the 1 minute on, 2 minutes off, three repeats can be just as effective as a 30 minute sort of, you know, 60 to 80%. Intensity cardio workout. So I put a few of my clients on that as their warm up before they start training. 1 minute on, 2 minutes off, three repeats. But that 1 minute needs to be hard. Some of them are kind of not quite there yet. So it's 30 seconds on and 2 minutes off, and they're building up 40 seconds, 50 seconds.
What equipment do you have them using it on?
Either the assault bike or, you know, early on it's just the bike, but I've got the rower, we've got a, what do you call it, Versa climber as well. So I let them sort of choose, and it depends. One of them's depending on whether they're doing upper or lower body. On an upper body day, they'll start on the rower because that'll kind of help warm that upper body up as well. On a lead day, they'll go on the bike. So
in the mid-2000s, when I was doing the amateur stuff, I would, if I had a half hour's cardio, I'd do 25 minutes on the bike, and then, you know, I'd have a sore bum, so I'd want to get off. And so I'd wrap up, go over to the boxing bag, do a minute of the bag, minute off, minute on, minute off, do five rounds, which is 10 minutes in total with the minutes off, and then go and step onto the treadmill after that. And of course, you're blowing out, hitting the bag. I had a bit of a boxing background before I was into bodybuilding and surfing and whatnot. And so I had the skills to be able to blast, but a minute on the heavy bag and then straight onto the treadmill. And you've really elevated that calorie burning and the heart rate. So you're actually just almost going downhill a little bit after that point. So it's
if you haven't done it before, a minute on the bag is a long time.
yeah, followed by a minute on the floor, it was.
Unless of course you're one of the guys training for MMA out there, because I went and I was very lucky to have the opportunity to watch a couple of guys watching a guy who's prepping for King of the Ring in next week, and my young fellow were there, and they were doing these bag drills over and over and rep after rep and harder and faster. And I was just sitting there going, fuck, do these guys ever stop? And
it speaks to their fitness, not absolutely. Not hard, just they are fit.
Their fitness on the bag is certainly something a lot more than ours. Hey, the other one I saw recently was, I've seen a couple of people on treadmills carrying either sandbags on the shoulders or a weighted vest on the treadmill. What's your thoughts on treadmills and adding weight?
I'd rather just make it steeper. That way you're going to target your glutes a little bit more. You're adding weight, you're putting more load on your ankles and tendons and knees and hips, and it's not going to do as much. I mean, the reality is, if you're walking up a real hill versus walking up a treadmill, you've got to remember, when you're walking on a treadmill, the floor is actually moving, so it's doing the work for you. You're really just actually walking up and down in the same spot, and the floor's moving. I'm telling you, because I used to sell treadmills, you know, but you want to walk up a hill, you're having to actually propel yourself physically and move that body weight at 90 to 100 kilos up the hill. It's a lot harder. And up a hill, you're going to get the glutes tightened up because they're getting hit. So, it's kind of silly.
When we're in Tauranga, when you sent us up that to go and have a look at that park,
yeah,
man, there's some hills in there. My calves are blowing out. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You must have done this in your prep, not off season.
There's a flight of stairs along from here. It's 153 stairs, and I would have climbed it. You know, I worked it out once. It worked out to be thousands of reps on those stairs. When I lived in Auckland, I lived in One Tree Hill at one point, and I walked to the top of there. The first time I got to the top of there, heart rate was 152 by the time we got to there. And I mean, I'm nowhere not in the mountains, but I swear the air was rarefied up there, right?
Good times.
But yeah, I'm a big believer in hills. Hills are great.
Yeah, they're fun. They're fun too.
When I was just like, I can't run anymore, my knees are shot. But while I was still trying to run, I'd power walk to the bottom of stairs. I'd run up and walk down with soft knees to keep the pressure off, and run up and walk down. So you feel like you're having a real cardio workout.
Yeah.
You know, as good as running. In fact, your heart rate's getting higher. And then I'd power walk home again. But when I couldn't run on the flat, because it would sort of, you know, my knees would blow out, but I could still do the stair sprints. So then that's still in the distance.
How do you get down soft knees? Because, man, walking downstairs, especially the steep mountain, my knees just hurt.
Just making sure the pressure's coming through the muscles and the tendons, as opposed to straight through the joints. You know, I've got a real stop-starty run. Like my heels are out in front of me, and every step when I run would be stopping with my heel and then sort of rotating over it, as opposed to that kind of skipping run. You know, you're supposed to have your toes just skipping through underneath you.
Yeah.
So compared to my sort of flat running, it was significantly better.
That must be how Constable Delane was able to chase you down.
Well, I wasn't running too fast.
Right. So good stuff there on off season, guys. So thank you for that. Mike, always appreciate having you on the show. So thank you once again. We'll get some info up about those shirts up on the gram. And until we catch up with you next, stay safe, enjoy your training, and we'll see you later on.
Take it easy, everyone.